Marianne Urban's request for spousal continuance following the death of Cicero retiree Richard. If you want to have a seat, make yourself comfortable. And I assume this is Mary Ann, but...
My name is Ralph Fandino. I'm legal counsel for Ms. Urban.
Ralph, nice to meet you. Mary Ann, welcome this morning. You've had correspondence between Cicera and yourself with regards to this issue, and staff's recommendation and legal counsel's recommendation is that this board, or the board, deny the request for the spousal continuance because of a marital settlement agreement, or settlement separation agreement that was in place prior to Mr. Urban's death. Is that
yes?
Fair statement? Okay.
Did you?
I'm not sure how the board wants to proceed. Do we want to hear our counsel's position first, or applicant's position first? What's the board's pleasure?
I've read our staff report and counsel's report. Unless there were questions of our counsel, perhaps we should hear the hear the presentation, and then we can ask questions.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. Ralph?
Again, thank you for letting us appear today, and we are appealing the designation by the board of Mrs. Urban as not being a surviving spouse of Mr. Urban. Mr. Urban was a 30-year member, so in keeping with your recognition this morning of yourself as a 30-year member, and your staff was a long-time member, Mr. Urban was a 30-year member, and he was married to Mrs. Urban up until the time of his death for over 20 years. And at this time, I'm actually going to let Mrs. Urban address the board. And we're going to rely on our correspondence to Mrs. Levy, your counsel. But there was a settlement judgment in place at the time of Mr. Irvin's death. And he had actually designated Mrs. Urban as his beneficiary before he died. So the cases that and the case law that's cited would not be applicable in this case because it's not a probate case. It's a family law judgment enforcement case. So if you have any questions, I think you should ask and address Mrs. Urban, who's ready, willing, and anxious, and she's looking forward to having her day after a long process. And Ms. Urban?
Yeah, well, my name is Mary Ann Urban, and I am the surviving spouse of Richard Urban. Yes, we had a legal separation in place as of October 3rd, 2013, and it overlapped about the same amount of time, 4.5 months. At that time, my husband was fighting for his life, and we had reconciled in March of 2012, and as of May 2012, he found that, speaking with one of the staff members here, Jessica Huffman, that he was able to put my name in as a designated beneficiary for surviving spouse for his remaining 30%. He was told over many years that he could not change anything for the beneficiary, and his ex-wife, Margaret Urban, won her award for the 30% of his pension in court. And in some of the paperwork that we got from the county, it says it was community property and all, and when she was awarded her 30%, my lawyer at the time when we were preparing papers for the legal separation quoted verbatim what was in the court order for her, which said that the remaining 30% was his sole and separate property. It was not community property. So in order for me to get that, he had to designate me. And for all those years, I mean, we came in, I knew I was supposed to get the lump sum. And we got married in 94, and in February of 94. And we came in two times to the office, and it was always, no, you can't get anything beyond that. But in 2012, I heard something different. And when we did hear that I was able to be for that remaining 30%, my husband jumped at the chance to do that. Because if you figure out the years involved here, he retired in 88 in March. And he and Margaret Irvin separated in July of that same year. So that's about 4 months after. And she had been with him for the full 30 years that he worked for Contra Costa County. So it was a judgment of the court that allowed her to receive the 30% that she is now getting. I'm hoping that I don't have to go that route. She probably wouldn't have, given the papers, which we do have. I've looked at all the divorce proceedings for them, and they didn't get divorced I think until 93, so the judgment for her didn't come down till then. And we got married in February of 94. So throughout our marriage, he was in pretty good health for the first 7 years, but after that, he went through no fewer than, I would say, 15 surgeries. And in the last 4.5 months, when we finally got this in place, because we were threatened with a fine from the Napa County Superior Court if we didn't make some kind of a decision to get out of the court. So this was the most responsible way that we could do it with the legal separation. But it was a very close, to say the least, separation. We were not really separated. I was with him every day throughout, and I was with him at the time of his death. And I was his advocate. I had power of attorney for him. I, you know, for all the legal decisions, all the medical decisions, this was not a distant separation. And in those 4 months when we thought that we had everything in place and thought that the wording on the separation agreement assured that I would be able to be provided for, which is what he was so relieved. He thought he had finally been able to provide for me, that made it easier for him, if it's you can say that, for him to finally pass. But it wasn't an easy pass, because in those 4.5 months, he had 5 hospital stays, 3 surgeries, 3 times in skilled nursing. He had congestive heart failure. And for a man who was, you know, other than being a social worker when he worked for Contra Costa, he was an actor. And he relied heavily on his voice. And for a man, you know, of his stature, to then be reduced to not even being able to breathe, it was very painful for both of us. And I stayed with him till the end. And I know that it was a great relief for him to have been able to do that for me. We separated because of a misunderstanding, and I prayed over it for many years. So that we could get back, and it wouldn't end badly for us, and it didn't. We were closer at the time of his death than we ever were throughout. And I mean, it's not that we weren't close when we were fully together. So he really believed that this was in place. And the thing is, I was told certain things in different correspondence with the county, that a surviving spouse isn't determined until after the person's death. Margaret Irvin, Rich's ex, was determined to be the surviving spouse, or a surviving spouse, over 21 years ago, long before he passed. And they said something about if there's a legal proceeding, once there's a legal proceeding that takes place and there's a judgment, you know, and you have to go by that, then, you know, because there was a legal separation in place, then, you know, I can't be considered that. But when Rich and Margaret signed papers when he retired, he chose option one, unmodified, and it was Government Code Section 31760.1. And it said because it was that, he could change his beneficiary at any time as long as it was designated in writing. And he did do that. And when I first called in to report that he had died, I was told there was no such form, that you didn't have any form that he signed. There were a lot of papers that the county had, and I had my attorney research this because there was question before we even went through formal separation. I didn't want to put my ability to get the 30% in jeopardy by doing a legal separation. And she assured me that I would be okay. And
actually, there are, if I can interrupt you, first of all, I think I speak for everybody to express our you know,
condolences. Grave,
you know, certainly our full condolences to the situation. This is a difficult one. But you just said something that piqued my interest, which is the discussions with your counsel. Are you referring to Joanne Harris?
Yes.
When you're talking about that, did Ms. Harris provide you with an opinion that a judgment of legal separation would not have an effect on your ability to obtain this benefit?
We were told as much.
And she told you that?
Yes.
And did she do so in writing?
Well, the terms of what she put in there to provide for me, as it said, survivor's benefits, she has it designated on the papers. And two times she's mentioned that I am surviving spouse for any pensions, any insurance, which I have gotten. He had a small military pension. That's a continuance each month for me. I got his full Social Security. I got whatever was from any life insurance, which he defaulted on because when we separated, he was worried that he wouldn't have enough money for himself to live. And I did not claim from him all that I could have gotten as far as spousal support. I only had $700 a month, and I could have gotten $1,700 easily, according to what she had figured out. They call it, it's a decimeter. So I didn't take that. I didn't want to, you know, put him out on the street. I just needed something so that, because this was unexpected for this to happen, and it had medical repercussions as far as his state of mind at that point.
Are you currently getting your military retirement from him?
I get a small pension, yeah,
you are
monthly. Yes, I am.
As a spouse.
Yeah, it's not three. It's not even 300, but he did have disability.
And it was his first wife, I assume. The other one was she getting it as well?
I don't think so.
No, you can only get one in the military.
Can I step back just a little bit? Margaret's pension or survivor benefit from SACERA. When was that awarded? And was that through?
The hearing was in 92, the court hearing, and it was awarded in,
okay,
in
so that,
93.
That was in a dissolution, divorce settlement. So his existing
A community property portion of my parents had the exact same thing. My parents are divorced.
So that really has nothing to do with your claim. Your claim is
the point
is on his remaining portion. That was has nothing to do with
she's
him.
Not a surviving spouse.
She is a surviving spouse. She was determined by the court to be a surviving spouse by order of the court.
Margaret,
if I may, Mr. Chair, explain a little bit about the procedural history of the first order. That first order was contested by SACERA.
Yes.
At the time, County Council was, I believe, representing SACERA. We don't believe that order is correct. The court cannot tell SACERA that somebody is an eligible surviving spouse.
Yeah, there's no way.
If they are not married, as stipulated by statute. And so this is a very unique situation where there is this possibility of having two surviving spouses if the second spouse qualified as an eligible surviving spouse. This, I'm going to venture to say, hasn't happened before and won't happen again, but the issue of having that first spouse with a 30% continuance, we don't think is authorized by statute. We're following the court's order after we contested it. There was a decision not to appeal. And so it is the law of the case, but it's an oddity.
Why would it not happen again?
we hope that next time the court makes the right decision.
Okay.
Whether or not someone is an eligible surviving spouse is defined by statute. It is not something that someone can designate by writing somebody's name on a form. And that's actually something that I wanted to clarify. Mm-hmm. It was put in the letters back and forth. There's two different things. There's a beneficiary designation. That is a designation that the member signs, fills out who they're designating. In this case, we have one, and the member designated Ms. Irvin. So she is indeed the beneficiary. She's entitled to a lump sum. The other question is, is there a surviving spouse in this situation? A surviving spouse would be eligible normally for a 60% continuance. That's not a lump sum payment.
Right.
That's an ongoing 60% of the retirement allowance paid to the spouse for life, for the life of that spouse. That is the question that is before the board today. That is whether Ms. Irvin qualifies as an eligible surviving spouse under the statute.
Now, I'm looking at the judgment. It says two places where he's keeping his retirement. It's mentioned twice, and that's where I'm stuck on. So is this a valid settlement, you know, judgment? If you look on page 5, mm-hmm. and again, page 8.
Yes, it is. And you also notice on paragraph 14 on page 8 where she is designated as the surviving spouse. And Mr. Irvin, in reliance of the earlier decision of the court designating his prior wife as surviving spouse, filled out the designation, taking to his death, thinking that his current wife was going to be eligible for the other 30%. So the fact that the board didn't appeal, I think you're really stopped from arguing that you're entitled to currently go after that designation as surviving spouse when you didn't do it 25 years ago.
We understand that his pension while he was living was going to him. The way I'm reading these two.
I'm sorry?
While he was alive, his pension was going strictly to him.
But yes. Margaret got at least, she got $200-some a month.
Yeah, but while he was alive.
That's the divorce settlement from the first.
Yeah, but even while he was alive, she got that.
Wait, let me get to the point.
Wait, look.
Okay.
After you separated, while he was still living, were you receiving retirement benefits from to Sarah?
I don't receive them. I receive spousal support.
Okay, you were getting none. I mean, it's all
strictly
going to him.
But she was getting.
Okay, right. But now, then it says here on 14, which you're bringing up, is another point. About the survival. Okay.
Karen, first of all, the first wife, again, I'm relating it to my own personal situation. My parents have been divorced for over 30 years, and my mother gets a portion of my father's retirement. So that is not a surviving spouse. That's part of their judgment, and I want to just clear that up. So I'm sure the first Mrs. Irvin was getting that all along. So she, you know, whatever. But my second question is, and I appreciate your comment about estoppel, but this Mrs. Irvin could, I don't know if she could she contest the court's decision on why question of the statute. Obviously, we argued there was a statutory reason why she's not a surviving spouse, the first Mrs. Irvin, and I'm going to assume that we didn't pursue it for, it just wasn't a large enough amount of money, and the cost-benefit ratio wasn't there. But this Mrs. Irvin could contest that in order to be named a surviving spouse. I get all the information and where you were in the marriage and different things, but this is a legal separation, which to all intents and purposes is a dissolution of marriage. It's just, let me finish my statement, please.
Wait.
It's a dissolution of marriage in the term sense that the marriage is determined to be over, but the legal separation is a legal term to protect the rights of people. And so there is still a judgment, and it divides the property. So the question, it seems to me, is, just as you said, this is a very unique situation. We have a situation of two surviving spouses and a court decision that went against us. So the question before us is whether to affirm the beneficiary status, which is the lump sum, or grant the surviving spouse. And Mr. Lederman is here, and you're giving us that. So I recognize all the emotion and all that, but I'm just trying to get down to the bare legal facts here. And I'm not hearing anything legally that requires us to name her as a second surviving spouse. I just want to make sure that's what I'm understanding from reading these documents.
Whether or not Ms. Irvin qualifies as a beneficiary is not before the board today.
Right.
She does. She is the beneficiary. She is the named beneficiary. She is entitled to the lump sum. The only question is whether she's an eligible surviving spouse.
Right, but if she is an eligible surviving spouse, I mean, the benefit, you're either one or the other. You can't be both, can you?
You can be both.
Well,
it's not an alternative. The only question is her eligibility today, whether she's an eligible surviving spouse. Whether or not the initial court order regarding the first spouse is nullified makes no difference.
No,
it
I agree.
It makes no difference
it's still
as to whether or not today, at the time of death of the member, Ms. Irvin is an eligible survivor.
I just want to make sure, though, if we determine that she is a surviving spouse and all the benefits that accrue to that classification, if you will, she doesn't get a beneficiary lump sum payment then, too, does she? She gets paid one way or the other. She either will be paid through as a beneficiary or as a surviving spouse.
There's also a lump sum $5,000 benefit that it goes to the
beneficiary. All right.
So if the beneficiary is the spouse and the spouse is an eligible surviving spouse,
that's how that works.
You get the lump sum and the 60%.
But if we just determine their beneficiary, that beneficiary lump sum is larger than $5,000. Oh,
that
all right.
It depends on
the case. All right. Thank you.
The death benefit is completely separate from whatever the value of the lump sum may or may not be. But my question is, if Margaret's award was based on a dissolution, why did the surviving spouse issue even come into play?
Right.
I mean, why was it even addressed by the court? I'm not sure if it was a dissolution and a quadro was in place and the account was split at that time.
Said that it was.
I'm not sure of everything that went on. It was a long time ago, but the court, based on probably the party's agreement, wanted to award the first spouse this spousal continuance, mm-hmm. Which they couldn't do under the law, which Sarah had to do before the court. And the court did it anyway.
Now, this kind of follows up on what Karen's question was. If Margaret was previously designated as a surviving spouse, whether it be right or wrong, let's assume that it was right for the moment, does she have a claim on the remaining portion of Richard's
this time
benefit?
Are you asking if she actually qualified as an eligible surviving spouse?
No, what I'm saying is the court at the time designated her a surviving spouse, even though he wasn't deceased at the time.
Maybe it was.
In theory, could she now come in and say, I've been designated a surviving spouse by the court, I want the benefits now that he's deceased, the continuing benefits now that he's deceased of the remaining portion.
I suppose she could argue that.
Okay.
I'd like to stay away from have us opine on what folks' rights are in terms of proceeding.
Yeah,
I just wanted
to clear up that Margaret's initial determination of a surviving spouse probably wasn't necessary or even appropriate in those proceedings at the time.
Right.
Community properties.
Okay.
She would have had
speculation, though. I mean,
it's wrong under the statute.
But she would have had to remain, according to your plan, in the papers for the divorce, it said the plan with a capital P. The plan says that in order for her to qualify for the 60%, she would have had to remain married to him.
Oh, absolutely.
And I understand that. And then on the first thing that both of them signed, which was the unmodified and option one, I would not have qualified under that because it says that she was the one that was married to him
1 year prior to his retirement.
Right.
There's no way that I could have done that. But according to 31760-2 and then D, I do qualify because I was married to him for 2 years prior to his death, and I am over the age of 55.
55, right.
He actually dealt with this a few weeks ago.
So it's changed.
Oh, right. With regard, it's expanded the definition of surviving spouse.
But she put in her 30 years. She was married to him for the 30 years that he worked for the county.
Okay. All right. Scott?
Question. Did Ms. Harris represent only you in the separation proceeding?
I had the attorney, yeah. She tried to work with both of us because he couldn't afford an attorney.
That was going to be my next question. Was he represented in this at all?
He consulted, I think, a couple of lawyers, but he never had anybody.
So she was your legal counsel?
Yeah.
At that time. Okay. Thank you.
What kind of court did we go back and appeal this or talk about? Was it back in family law or did it go to a civil court? So we said this was wrong with the statute. We went in front of the judge and the judge ruled against us. Was it a family law judge that we went in front of?
I believe it was in family court.
I'm just wondering, Mrs. Irwin, you mentioned earlier that you had been approached by Napa County about doing something with the filing, and so that was...
Well, I only knew that through my attorney.
So that...
Because she always told me that Napa didn't want these things to linger.
Okay.
And I kind of prolonged things because I really didn't want a divorce. Mm-hmm. I hoped that we could reconcile. And in the end, we did.
And then you mentioned that you felt you were always married, you were by his side during those last 2 years, and you'd hope to reconcile. So my question to you is, then why go through with the legal separation? Why not withdraw the case and be married?
Well, it was the only responsible thing we could do.
Well,
if you look at the legal separation papers, if you look in the back, there's a whole list of would-be debtors, debts, I should say, for what debts he incurred while we were separated.
Mm-hmm.
And I, went through bills and things when we were forming the papers, and I calculated that it could be as much as $20,000.
You didn't end the separation because you didn't want to take on the debt that you incurred?
That was the only responsible way I could get out. And then we could focus on his care. I mean, it was horrendous what we were dealing with, and we just figured that we could put it to rest better that way, and at least we were still married. And community property for us, we didn't have a whole lot. We didn't have a house. Furniture and things were divided when he actually left. And we solidified that, but, I mean, it's staggering what's on there for the debts. My debts were my basic things month to month, and I had very little for my Social Security, so I had about, I think it was around $1,200 a month. That's all I had between the $700 from his pension and what I had from Social Security.
Now, this is a question more for Karen, or maybe you can answer it. If there was an actual divorce, would we be here? Is it any different because it's a legal separation and not a divorce?
Ooh, then she wouldn't have been married for the 2 years prior to his death, and no, we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here.
Yeah, no.
Well, let's assume that she would have met those qualifications. Well, that's true. If she wasn't married, the issue is if she was married at the time of his death. Okay.
Yeah. The unfortunate thing to me seems the conflicting information and between attorney and perhaps the Sarah on... what the status of each spouse has been, and that's unfortunate, but I think under the law, and as Karen Levy has stated, I mean, we've got a very unique situation here, and I take it that the family law issue is in Napa Superior Court?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But perhaps this needs to be adjudicated further. I never like to... I think that we have to take legal action, but
one thing I'm hearing is there's two parts of it. One is I don't want to end. You didn't want to end it because you don't want to take on his debt yet,
But you, no, you, it's, you, I didn't want to end it because I didn't want to end it. I still loved him.
No, no, I meant the legal separation. Right. You didn't withdraw from the court because you didn't want to take on his debt.
Well, that's how we withdrew it from the court.
Court retains jurisdiction over a judgment, so there is no, it really doesn't end.
But the judgment of legal separation fully disposes of the community property interest to the respective parties. Yes, that's the point of this, right?
This isn't community
and
property.
What is you still have an adjudication over the issues within that judgment, which includes this designation as sole surviving spouse by Mrs. Irvin.
Well, have you petitioned the court for any kind of an order in that regard?
Well, we're here first.
That's where I think it needs.
Well, but back to the point, the judgment of separation fully and finally, I mean the judgment by its term says this, so this is not a novel proposition. It fully and finally disposes of the property interest between the party. Can we agree on that?
Depends on what you're saying for property.
Subject to any jurisdiction that the court may retain over the contents of.
Well, I don't know where we're at on this. Here's what I think. I'm just going to speak out, and we can decide what to do in the orderly course of things. This is a difficult situation. As I say, I want to express condolences. This has been very difficult for you. I was persuaded by the court's reasoning in In re Burson, which is a Santa Barbara County case, that in this instance, in this situation, almost an identical situation, when you have a judgment of legal separation fully and finally disposing of the party's interest in the property, that the claim now to be a surviving spouse is inconsistent with the statute. The statute doesn't authorize that. The court, I assume you've read that, had issued a very thoughtful opinion about it. And what it gets down to for me is, even if I want to accept for the sake of argument that the parties had this intention, that they intended this result, if the statute doesn't authorize it, then it can't be. Parties might agree to do something because they think it might get a favorable tax treatment in some matter, but if the tax code doesn't authorize it or some other statute doesn't authorize it, it can't be. It's not effective. And I see this one in the same way, in the sense that you have parties who may have intended a certain result. Again, I'll accept that for the sake of argument. But the judgment of legal separation, fully and finally disposing of the party's property interests, makes the designation of surviving spouse impossible under the statute. And I'm persuaded by the reasoning of
I'm sorry, I don't
Santa
have
Barbara
that,
case.
That case site. Is that part of your letter?
Yeah.
It's in the material.
That's the case cited to with Leahy?
Leahy was cited to, correct. We provided you with a copy of the Superior Court ruling in the Burson case. It is from Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I don't recall receiving
it. Factually, it has a lot of similarities, and I thought the court issued a very well-reasoned, thoughtful, and thorough decision on the matter. So for the sake of addressing this, I'm going to move the staff recommendation that we deny the request based on the reasoning primarily of our legal counsel and the judgment in In re Burson. The same rationale holds here. So I would so move.
It wasn't community property, though.
I'll second.
I want to add from my experience, too, legal separation, the divorce doesn't happen right away. Legal separation pretty much solidifies everything as the process goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of always seen it as being basically a divorce, but there's a timeline we have to follow to get to that final point.
Well, I'm persuaded by Scott's argument relative to tax situations. We've all heard of these types of things where people, you know, for the best of intentions, nobody's trying to do anything nefarious, but the law is the law, and if it needs to be decided otherwise, that needs to be adjudicated. And so I'm going to be supportive of the motion.
Jerry?
Yeah. this is very difficult for me on an emotional basis. I have a lot of sympathy for what you're going through. I have a lot of I just have a lot of sympathy. And it's not a great deal of money. I recognize that it's not a great deal of money that we would be awarding you if we followed suit. But I have to look at the law. And as I read all of the material that you have provided and our council has provided, I keep coming, what really convinced me of what way I was going to go was I went to the court order and I read the court order, and it said, as set under 4L, as set forth in the attached settlement agreement, stipulations for judgment or other written agreement. And I went to the court order, and the court order on page 12 specifically says, for these reasons, the court concludes that surviving spouse under section 31760.1 excludes a spouse who has entered into a legal separation agreement in which all community property interests have been terminated. So I've read that. So for me, I have to follow with what Scott has said, and I support that motion. But on the other side of it, I would encourage you to go to court and see and get the court to change their opinion and then come back, because then there would be more grounds and more acceptable grounds for me. So that's where I stand.
Ralph, Marianne, any?
I'm not under that, though. I'm not under the one that he signed originally. That applies to Margaret. I'm under the second one. I would not have qualified as a surviving spouse under the first government code. I qualified under the second. And that wasn't community property. And he earned that. And he went to the grave thinking that he had provided for me.
Then,
and I'm trying to put that in place as best I can. And when I first called here, I wasn't met with offers of condolence or anything. I was met with, who are you? And I was told flat out, within 2 weeks after he passed, having gone through 4.5 months of horror trying to save his life, I was met with, you won't get anything. The attitude was terrible on the part of Contra Costa County. And it's been nothing short of a nightmare.
Okay. See, the county meant the Retirement Association?
Who I dealt with, yes.
I'll tell you, anytime going forward that does happen, you should bring to somebody's attention if you don't feel your...
They haven't even declared him dead. I'm still getting the things to go to luncheons, and I'm still getting the book for members from the union. And I've called and called and called.
Yeah, I just don't think anybody here is that cold-hearted. I feel bad for you and stuff.
Well, it took a long time to get the adjudication and to even get your representative. He didn't return phone calls, 5, 6. I can personally represent that. Emails, 5, 10 emails, and they were never responded to. Miss Levy was unavailable, and she had personal circumstances, I understand, where she was out for a while. But that was no excuse for Mr. Hurd or even Jessica Hoffman to not respond to anything.
Karen Davis.
Yeah, I think it was Karen Davis.
Excuse me.
Yeah, I'm going to defend them. I know them well enough where anytime that does happen, see it happen again, she'd contact somebody, like a CEO or somebody here.
We tried to.
We did.
I tried to.
And they never responded either. And I, if you were to look at the email train, I'd be glad to forward them to you. They were never responded to. It's unfortunate. And part of dealing with something like this, but I think it was a little bit above and beyond. That's just my personal feeling.
Yeah, I'm not after Margaret's 30%, and I don't care if that gets changed or not. She deserved that. I think the court saw that and reacted humanely for her, having been with him for the 30 years that he worked for the county. And that's what they took into consideration. And I was hoping that, you know, I mean, I had 20 years with him, and that was supposed to have been designated as his sole and separate property, not community property.
We recognize that. I'm not dealing with my decision based on that first case. I'm dealing with that portion afterwards, his sole separate property. That's what I'm dealing with.
Because I don't ever recall having seen that site. So
if that's what you're dealing with, then it should be a different result.
Okay.
For sure.
Any other comments?
Well, you didn't get that other.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Again, you are certainly welcome to take this to court, and if we're still determined otherwise, we absolutely will abide by that.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hopefully, it'll go through Patrick Foster's investors' salaries.
Okay, so.
Chris.
We're going to jump to item 12.